What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Sylvia Hubbard. Sylvia is the Executive Director of MACA.
How are you?
Glad to have you. Thank you for having us. Glad to have you. I appreciate you coming. Shedrick Bryant, he is an eighth grader at Fairview Middle School. He's into sports, math, and science.
Hello.
Kennedy Williams, ninth grade, Childs High School, interested in track and field and talking and fashion.
Hello.
Naya Hubbard, she is a volunteer, works with youth.
Hello.
Tobias Thomas. Tobias is in the eighth grade. He is at Crossword Academy. He is into track.
Hello.
Alyssa Crawford. Alyssa is a senior in nursing at Florida A&M.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And Andrew Scarrett. Andrew is a faculty at Florida A&M in journalism.
Good to be back.
Welcome, all of you, to 411 Teen. First, let's just briefly look at MACA to refresh our listening audience with what MACA is all about. It's the Minority Alliance for Advocating Community Awareness Action. It was established to empower the community through the linkage of services, through the creation of culturally sensitive programs and mobilization of various strategies. MACA strives to provide innovative solutions to various community issues. Ms. Hubbard, let's look at your agency. Can you just give us kind of an overview of what it's about?
Well, we're still being innovative in our programs. We had some youth to come in who were born HIV positive, so we started up our YMAC again, the Youth Minority AIDS Action Committee, and we have some of those peers here with us today. We do a lot of things in the community to make people aware of HIV AIDS, testing, prevention work. We collectively in the community connect with people who are doing STD screenings as well as hepatitis testing. We do everything we can to make this a holistic approach to try to combat HIV AIDS.
For those who may be listening and may want to contact you or connect with you, how do they access you?
They can call me at 850-942-6222. Again, that's 850-942-6222. That's the office, and we're located at 1720 South Gadsden Street, Suite 223.
Okay. What are your hours?
And we're there from 8:30 to 5 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
Well, that is just great. Listening audience, you get that? You want to run it by one more time.
That phone number is 850-942-6222. We're located at 1720 South Gadsden Street, Tallahassee, Florida, 32301, and we're in Suite 223, and you can reach us from 8:30 to 5 every day, Monday through Friday.
Okay. You all provide a myriad of various services, social services, educational services. These services, I know, deal with the whole gamut, I guess, from the elderly all the way to infants. Today, we're going to talk about the services and programs that you have available for young folks. And when I say young folks, I'm talking about the adolescents. Would you share with us the program that you do have available that young folks may participate in?
We do. We actually trained, I think, five adolescents to do HIV testing. Some of those were out testing with us on Saturday at the community baby shower, where we were able to provide testing to females who are pregnant here in Leon County. So what we like for them to do is create events, work directly with testing in the field, and be able to carry the correct message about HIV AIDS, STDs to their peers at schools, in the community, at churches, wherever they go. So we do a lot of training, especially with our youth.
And I hear you talk about training. What about those who may want to become involved at the training level? How would they go about this?
Actually, Naya is here, and she works directly with the youth, and she can explain that. And most of our services for the youth are done on Saturdays.
Okay. Yes, Naya, would you share that with us, please?
Yes, what I do is, like we said, we do the trainings with the youth. So right now I have two FAMU students that are actually testing, and then actually high school and middle school students that go out and do testing with us on Saturdays. We go between Gaston and Leon County and do HIV testing, and I provide the counseling services as far as with, you know, talking about safe sex and things like that. And we also go to different events and talk to youth and teens in reference to safe sex, not having sex.
Excuse me, what does the training involve?
The training is 8 hours, and it involves like HIV 101. So you're talking about how you can be exposed to the disease, how you, if you are exposed, how about medication management, condom usage, how to put on a condom properly, how to talk to your partners about sex, or practicing abstinence and not having sex, or if you are a virgin, stay a virgin and wait until you're married.
Okay. How receptive are the schools to you?
Most of the schools are pretty open to it, especially like the health classes. Mm-hmm. So we would have some teachers that will call and say, can you come and, you know, talk to our youth about different STDs. And what I like to do with the teens is do a sex game. And the sex game is basically the students exchange papers. And by the end of the game, everyone is standing up because they've been exposed to HIV or have some type of STD.
And it's sort of like a visual aid to kids understand more when you're playing the games. You just have different types of paper, and each one of the paper has an STD on it. We also do one with cups, where at the bottom, you know, there's an STD, mm-hmm. you're pregnant, and you
kind
ask them to...
playing.
Yes, mm-hmm. and you ask them to have a drink, give them a cookie to chew, and let them switch out the drinks, and then say, go ahead and have you another sip in there. No, I don't want to do that. That's nasty. Well, this is what you're doing mm-hmm. when you're swapping partners doing sex. It's just as nasty. So all of those games, we have an opportunity to show them that it's better and there's consequences when you don't abstain from sex.
For you young folks who are involved in the training and volunteers, what was the impetus? What was it that made you become involved in this particular project? And I'm looking at you, Cedric, so I'll start with you.
The statistics that said that, like, how many children get HIV at this age, and, well, basically the need to want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Tobias?
Well, my grandma's the head of MECA, so she wanted me to help. So I was like, yeah, and it gave me a chance to learn about HIV and AIDS.
Okay. Kennedy?
Well,
I know you're older, but still.
It was kind of in the community, and I always heard about it in, like, sex ed classes, and it always kind of scared me, and thinking about all the kids who always asked me, hey, you have a boyfriend? Oh, I'm going to his house tomorrow night or something. I'm just like, ew, okay. So I kind of got into abstinence because I'd see other girls around the community mm-hmm. with babies. I'm just like, that's sad, mm-hmm. and I feel sorry for them.
What's the attitude, Alyssa, that you find at the college level as far as STIs, STDs are concerned?
I honestly believe there's a lack of education or proper education as well as awareness relating to the issue. A lot of people or a lot of freshmen that I've came in contact with feel as if they're invincible, as do a lot of many young people that I've came in contact with, and statistics have shown to be true. Aside from the invincible part, when people do try to understand HIV, there's not the proper education surrounding it. So you have your basic HIV 101 facts, but people do not go in depth when it comes to educating about the illness. And then to go further, there's not a lot of personalization going on. People are not making the connections that it can happen to me or it can happen to my sister or my friend.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that's going on? I mean, why do you think they don't make that connection? Because it is really all around us.
It is, unfortunately.
They're just in denial, or what's going on?
I think kids just think it can't happen to me.
Yeah, and it's just, and it's not that they may 100% think that it cannot happen to them. It's just they don't think at all. That's really, I believe that's the issue. I don't think people think about it at all until it does hit home. And most of the time, when it does hit home, then it is too late, whether it's for them or for a family member. But hopefully it's not for them. It doesn't hit home to them, because if it doesn't hit home to them personally, then they'll be able to take their own initiative to prevent it happening to them personally.
What seems to be lacking, and you all have kind of alluded to this, is the education.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that lacking? I mean, where, I guess my first question would be to all of you kids particularly, where do you get your information about sex?
Sex ed class.
That's where you get all your information, yes, sex ed.
My grandma, class, and this program.
Okay.
I say it all starts with your parents, because I'm not very much a social networker, but I also saw this thing, like, you weren't born like that. Like, you didn't come out wanting to have sex. Mm-hmm. It's how you're raised.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, Mr. So Scared.
I think the media plays a big part, because it's all the sex on the TV. So kids are wanting to be sexy and look sexy and feel sexy. Because I have a little four-year-old, and she's always wanting to be sexy and put on a little shorts like the teenagers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, seriously?
Mm-hmm. Yes, everything is hypersexualized. Yeah. It's a big difference from my generation to your generation, all the way to the upcoming generations coming up. And also, HIV is no longer the glamour disease, so there's not a lot of prevention ads out there to allude to the community that it's primarily being that's primarily affected, which is African Americans. And the ads that are out there is more so geared towards hip hop or the stereotypical black person, and you can typically find those ads on BET.
Mm-hmm.
And not every black person watch BET, you know.
Andrew, what have you found in your studies and investigation?
I agree with a lot of what I'm hearing, because we have a situation where, you know, the rules have changed a lot, and in terms of hypersexuality, the way people dress, the way people move, and I think as a society, a lot of the barriers towards sex are breaking down, and children are hearing yes more than no. Mm-hmm. And so that's one, you know, we have to deal with the consequence of that. Secondly, I think that we are living in an age where people can actually grow up and reach teenagers without really having a serious conversation about sex and HIV and STDs. And unfortunately, it becomes an issue when after exposure happens. And so what we're seeing is that a lot of young people are being infected and not even being aware that they're being infected, because they're not getting tested. They're not being aware. And the CDC says that 1,000 young people in America are infected every day, every month. That's sobering.
Yeah, he's correct, because if you look at the data from the Florida Department of Health, you'll see that youth ages 15 to 19 have more cases of STIs than any other age range, and it's mainly in the black communities. And I think if the black community, we did a training today, and one of the persons there said, why aren't we doing more of this in the community? He had never come to one of my training, and he was wondering, why aren't we in the community doing this more often?
Well, my question would be, first, I wanted to get back to the media. Do you think we're sending mixed messages?
Yes, we are. There's no question about it, because we send a message where sex is okay, and but if you're an adult, you can make the distinction. But if you're at a certain age, you're not sophisticated enough to do that. And unfortunately, we have a situation where we've got like a Miley Cyrus, who for a lot of young girls, she was somebody to look up to for so many years. And then she flips the switch and then she becomes this other person. And what do they do? Which Miley Cyrus do they look up to? And so there's a lot of confusion for our young people. And what we're seeing is the consequences of that confusion.
Yeah, Kennedy.
Well, about Miley Cyrus, there are different parts to her. Like, some of the songs she does sing nowadays are not as sexual as you think they were. Maybe the way she dresses to put out the song is not as you think it should be. But a lot of the songs in there, like, if you listen to the whole album, there's a bunch of deep stuff where it's not about sex. It's about real life. Not everything's a fairy tale. Not everybody's going to love you for real. You can't get in deep and sleep with them and be that person and get stuck.
Well, I think that's that mixed message.
Yes.
Because if I'm dressing and showing my whole body, then I'm not listening to the words. I hear the music.
Exactly. Hold your thoughts. We'll come right back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I am talking with a dynamic group this hour. We are looking at attitudes towards sex and HIV and AIDS. Before we went on break, I had to interrupt you, Ms. Hubbard. I know you were making a statement. Did you want to continue?
Well, I was just saying the mixed messages of dressing appropriately versus singing a nice song. And I'm not hearing the song. All I see is what you're wearing. I mean, even when you sell cars, I'm not sure if you're selling a car or selling a body. And for kids, they definitely can't make the decision of what's going on.
But sex is everywhere. It's in the music, in the videos, cartoons, TV shows. Sometimes I just have to turn the TV and everything out because I'm like, this is just too much.
Well, you talked about HIV and AIDS being disproportionately represented in the black community. What's going on there that it's disproportionately represented there? Why are we seeing such a prevalence in the black community?
Well, I think it's just what this guy said today when we were showing the HIV video. And he was like, well, why don't we see more of this? I think everybody is saying the same thing, that it's not enough information in the black community. Even though information is there, it's not getting to where it needs to be.
And how do we address that? What do we do? Naya, you work with the youth, and then Mr. Scared.
I know when we go out in the community and we are talking to people, a lot of people, just like Alyssa said, they're misinformed. So they think, okay, I only sleep with this one person. I can't get it. So I'm always telling people, just because you're faithful to that person, it doesn't mean they're being faithful to you. So it's just the misinformation, and then a lot of people think you can just actually get HIV by touching a person who has HIV, and I'm like, no, you cannot. So it's just a lot of the miseducation, listening to whatever other people may say instead of reading and learning for themselves. A lot of people are afraid to take a test to know their status. Mm-hmm. And then you have a lot of people who know their status and they're still going around having unprotected sex with people. So it's just, we just have to do better as a whole.
Mr. Scare.
In doing research for my book, Ashamed to Die, Silence, Denial, and AIDS in the South, what I found was that there are a lot of cultural factors that bring to bear with this whole discussion of HIV and AIDS, is that, you know, many of us, especially from this part of the country, culturally conservative, but sex is still something that happens. And so there's an absence of a lot of serious discussion of, you know, if you're having sex, then you need to use a condom. Where, okay, the whole pretense, I'm not doing it. But, you know, but ooh, how did you get pregnant? So there's that incessant denial that we're dealing with, both about in terms of action and in terms of testing. What we found is that for HIV, African Americans tend to test later on in the illness. And with all the wonderful meds that are available, if you test early and you get on treatment early, your chances of living a long, healthy life are improved. But if you walk around in denial and your viral load gets out of control, your chances of survival decrease. And so you have a situation where if I don't know I have it, then I'm fine. And so you've got the denial, you have the shame.
And you have that population that feel that way. And another thing that I'm looking at too and seeing is that our young people, and especially young women, are looking at the older guys who are much more experienced with sex, and they're giving it to these young ladies who don't find out until they're, 15, ready to go to college, that they're HIV positive. We were over in another county, and two girls walked up, and I said, y'all want to take a test? And they said, sure, we'll take one. Our friend just turned 17, and they told her she was HIV positive. Happy birthday. On her birthday, she was told, 17 years old, that she's HIV positive. So she's having sex with somebody who probably knew they were positive.
Not only that, too, we have to do better in our churches. Because a lot of the churches don't want to open their doors and talk to their congregation in reference to HIV and AIDS or using a condom, because in their mind, our kids are not having sex, but you have a lot of teens that are pregnant, that have STDs, and they're not getting treated for. So our churches have to open up the doors to be open to hear about it and educate their congregation about it also.
I would also think that it's a lot deeper than just pointing out one or two solutions, because we have to dissect exactly what our community has came to. Before, our community took pride in reserving themselves, our women and our men, you know, but now we have transitioned to this part of hypersexuality. And then, you know, when women are hypersexualized, psychologists have done research that show, like, a lot of these women have been raped or molested. A lot of these women do not have fathers. Mm-hmm. And then look at the modes of contraction, seeing as anal sex is the most riskiest form of sex. And also when it comes to access to information, a lot of people who do receive the information, they already know. They're just participating in these events because they feel as if it's a good event for the community and they're playing their role as a citizen. However, the people that really do need to be informed are most of the time not there.
Well, let's deal with HIV and AIDS 101, because I think it'd be beneficial to share some of the information. Exactly what is AIDS? When you have a positive HIV and AIDS, can you talk about that?
Well, the first thing you're going to get is HIV. That's the beginning. That's when someone has infected you. And it progressed through stages. And most African American don't know they're infected until they have AIDS. And that's when your immune system is below 200 and you're really sick at that point.
What are some of the symptoms that I guess people tend to overlook? Because if I remember correctly, they're kind of flu-like symptoms.
Yeah, that's the early stage when you're first infected.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of feel like you got the flu and you don't pay much attention because you have
the flu.
Yeah. And after that, it's nothing.
It can be.
But the virus is destroying your body.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you can go 10 years without knowing.
Exactly.
And you can end up cutting yourself and that wound doesn't heal. It takes a while.
And at what point, what gets them to medical care? When they get to medical care, they're typically checking
on themselves. That's when they're, that's when they will get that medical care, because when they run the test and the tests come back positive, that's the only way that they will see whether or not they are infected or not. But it usually happens when they take that initiative to see or check on their cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if they're really sick. Mm-hmm. and they can't figure out what the problem is. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people that are under physician care, and because of who they are, the doctor is running all sorts of other tests instead of asking the right questions. And they're wasting a lot of valuable time, and that person really has AIDS. And we've had a couple of deaths this year within the last 6 months of people who was misdiagnosed. And
really?
Yeah. So it's happening daily.
It's still happening. Can you share with us some of the risk factors that are associated with HIV/AIDS?
Well, I know for a fact that y'all keep saying to use a condom when you're having sex, but I've heard before, I know for a fact that a condom doesn't always work.
You're absolutely correct.
It is 99.9%. Effective.
And the thing about a condom is, one of the things I like to teach youth is to not have sex at all because of the consequences. You're not ready to handle birth. You're certainly not ready to handle your positive or your STDs. But one of the things is multiple sex partners, and what people don't look at is, that's my only man, but he's had 20 women. So now you've had 21 persons that you're having sex with. And that's the thing people need to understand.
Mm-hmm. You look like your wheels were turning.
As Alyssa said, this is a complicated issue. And one of the big things is that the AIDS community struggles with is, how does it reach the Black community? Because the ways of delivering that message for the majority population does not work out many times for the population that needs it. And so there are a lot of cultural issues that you've got to bridge in order for people to even believe you. Because again, there's so many myths, so many untruths, so many, it's because there's a wisdom on the street about HIV and AIDS. And for people, that is the truth. And so somebody comes along and said, no, that's false. You've got to undo all that misinformation. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the misinformation. You've got the history of behavior, where you've got in small communities where the same people are having sex with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens, because a lot of these people are sort of cut off from the larger community and they're within that circle. Mm-hmm. And the STDs just circulate within these small groups.
And I think, too, as HIV providers, we get comfortable with what Alyssa alluded to. We just keep preaching to the same people. Mm-hmm. And so I was very pleased when we decided, okay, next year we're going straight to the community. Enough of this talking to the choir who's here every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud to say that this gentleman sitting in an African-American male, after watching this video, said, why isn't this played more often? Why aren't we seeing this? And so we got two new volunteers today.
That's
good. Yay for MACA. And they are people who are on the street, standing on the corners. Well, and they were really wanting it.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Alyssa.
Another issue with HIV and prevention is the dollars involved. HIV and health in general is a money pool. You know, so the more numbers you bring in far as negative or more so positive tests, the more grant money you receive, the more funds you get and things like of that nature. However, when it comes to small businesses who has little resources or a lack of resources versus this big agency over here who receives much funding, it would make sense for the smaller agency to do less than what the big agency will do, seeing as the funds that they have is limited. Mm-hmm. However, with MACA specifically, MACA actually goes out in the community and they go front line with people in the community, whether they're positive or negative, whether they're professional seeking people or whether they...
With everyone.
Sell drugs.
Well, and I think we need to go back and address the various ways one can contract HIV and AIDS, because it's not only sex. It's not only through, you know, sexual intercourse, whether it's right. anal intercourse. And there are some other ways that we can contract it.
Yes, you get it by sharing needles.
Mm-hmm.
Any bodily fluid exchange, you can expose yourself to it.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the saliva, you would have to drink ounces and ounces of saliva to get it.
Or urine.
Through breast milk, a mother can pass it to her child if she's positive through her breast milk.
Okay. What does the test involve? So often, you know, we are reluctant to be tested because we just don't know what the test involves and we're afraid of it. So if you all could share at this point exactly what testing involves. Is it painful? Is it going to hurt? That kind of thing. How much is it going to cost? Where can I go and get it free? And all of these, can you address that, please, Kennedy?
Well, MACA does free testing,
mm-hmm.
and it's not really painful. It kind of leaves a nasty taste in your mouth. It's kind of like this salt stick type thing you hold in your mouth, and it gets basically a swab of your saliva. You stick it in the gel, close it, wrap it up, and then they'll send it off to test it.
Takes 2 weeks. Okay. All right.
There's other ways you can get tested also. Like she said, MACA does the OraSure, and it takes 2 weeks before you get your results. But there's also other places you can get tested, and they do a prick in your hand, and you can get your results in 30 minutes. I mean, yeah, 30 minutes. There's other places where they can do the swab in your mouth, and you can get immediate results also.
You can buy over-the-counter testing?
Yes, and that costs.
Yeah.
So you can go to any of these other agencies and get it done for free.
FAMU tests for free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
FSU, I think there is a fee. The Leon County Health Department's tests do rapid testing. So there's no excuse to not test.
Testing is free in the state of Florida by your local health department.
Yeah, the health department.
And condoms are free.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's amazing that you say it's so free, but the numbers suggest that despite the openness, and young people are not taking advantage of it. The stat says 13% of high school students have been tested and 22% of sexually active high school students have been tested. So you see, so despite the free testing, we need to instruct our young people that they need to take advantage of this testing.
Yes, Kenneth.
Well, I know from experience of friends that I talk to that they just simply don't want to, or their parents won't drive them, or they're too embarrassed to get the test or the condom. I mean, there's some people at my school who are free, like, oh, yay, like girls on the bus with condoms laughing about it like it's a big joke. And it's everything is a joke, basically. And they don't understand that it needs to be serious.
And one thing I can say about MACA, if you are ashamed to come to the office or test with your friends, we have gone into people's homes and test them wherever they're comfortable mm-hmm. with taking a test. If they want to do it in the back of our car, we'll do it. Wherever you're comfortable, because we believe that everyone should know their status, because, like he said, statistics shows, like right now, 18% of all our new HIV diagnoses are among people aged 13 to 24.
Ooh, hold that thought for a moment. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. We are having a conversation about HIV, AIDS, sexual activity. And Naya, I had to interrupt you. You were sharing some very, very shocking statistics about HIV and AIDS. And
yes. Statistics shows 18% of all new HIV diagnoses are among youths between the ages of 13 and 24. 10,000 teens are infected by STDs per day. That's one every 8 seconds. Not only that, we have on the rise, too, men who have sex with other men or men who are on a down low, but they're also having sex with females. So that's on the rise, too, where African-American females are the highest ones that are contracted with HIV and AIDS.
Mr. Scott, did you... You had some comments.
Yeah, that's an area that I think we really are going to need to look at. And I think with societal attitudes towards homosexuality changing, maybe it can help combat what's happening in the black community. Because what we have is among the young people who are infected with AIDS, the majority of those people are young black men, gay or mm-hmm. bisexual men, and a lot of it comes their use of alcohol, drugs in association with risky behavior. And the question is, if we combat homophobia within the black community, would it alleviate that kind of behavior? And it's something I think that we need to be part of the discussion.
Okay, Kennedy.
Well, I actually heard a topic about this that. No matter what you do, now that times are changing, the more you talk about homophobia and the more you're against it, the more they'll shut you down. And they'll do it nice and quick to where whatever you said is wrong. I have nothing against those people. Like, I don't think of them as disease and kind of throw them away. Like, don't talk to me or something like that. I'm not like that. I'm not necessarily okay with it, but that's just my preference. That's how I was raised. And I got in arguments with some friends about it. They were like, well, we're not gay, but what's wrong with it? I mean, I'm just like, well, that's just my preference. And I quickly say, if this is going to be an argument, we're not going to talk about this because I have nothing to say on that.
And I think that's one of the issues that have kept the African-American mm-hmm. community so far at bay with fighting against HIV is because of the stigma of being gay, lesbian. And we just must remember, HIV don't care what you do. I mean, who you are, it's what you do. I mean, because the heterosexual numbers are just as high as the gay men. And I was testing in another county. I have lots of stories where this young man thought it was fine to have sex with both male and female. And he was talking to his friend. He said, well, yeah, you know I'm doing your cousin, too. Yeah, I like both men and women. And he was, you know, it was just nice to talk about. And he wasn't ashamed. Well, I can appreciate him a lot more than the ones who are quiet and secret and giving it to females, and they have the females have no knowledge of this guy sleeping around with men also. And we must remember what Alyssa said. One of the riskiest behavior is anal sex. And that's because of the so many blood vessels in the anus area that exposes you more rapidly.
Yes, and being HIV positive is the HIV positive community alludes to the homosexual community because they are both stigmatized, you know, so it is a handshake away. However, when it comes to, like Ms. Hubbard said, men who have sex with men who are open with that versus men who hide it, that does pose an additional risk to our community. And one thing about our community, unfortunately, we have no sense of community anymore, which is why things or issues are able to come in and target us. So, and we are devoured from those things, such as HIV and AIDS, and now homosexuality, which is on the rise now amongst our men and our women. The image of a black man nowadays are either thug-like or colorful. And
there's not much difference between what a gay man look like and a straight man anymore.
That's what I mean. Yeah, colorful.
Yeah, I'm bringing colorful. It out. Yeah. Yeah.
All that is.
Yeah. You can't tell the difference.
Well, you can't tell by looking at someone whether they have AIDS or not.
That's
a lot of people think you can.
That's
but
correct.
You can't do
you
it.
Cannot tell.
Yes, Kennedy.
I know that's not a joking matter, but somebody came up with this joke where they made the comment of they just look like they got AIDS. And I kind of made this face, and I was like, what does that even mean? And they were like, I mean, just look at them. Or they'd look at somebody and be like, she must be gay. And I'm just like, no, I actually know them. They're straight. They're just joking around. They're like, the more they joke, the more they'll be on that side.
But what I'm hearing is that, what I'm hearing is that you're looking for something, and it's not a look.
And that's an issue
that's
in our community,
it.
Again, far as HIV and AIDS go.
Yeah. Because of parents
that wasn't
matters.
A joke. That was a stereotype.
Yeah.
That was a stereotype. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions about the virus is that it has
you
a look.
Yeah.
It, like, people envision people who are very skinny, dark, light, with sucked-in cheekbones and things like that. And that is not the case because people who have HIV look like you and I.
Yeah.
Most of us here, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right. Well, not only that, I know we a couple of years ago, we did a teen summit. And at the summit, you know, we did the games and everything like that. But we actually had real positive people there. And we did the panel and everything. And then at the end, we were like, we actually got some people here who are actually HIV positive. And we let the kids try to figure out who it was. They never picked out the people who was actually HIV positive. And then the people who were positive actually said, no, I'm positive. And they told their story. And the kids was like, wow, you don't look like it. And that's, I mean, people have to realize, you know, you just can't look at a person and assume they're clean. And you can't take their word for it when they say they're clean.
Yeah.
Well, there are some STDs that you can tell they have it, like herpes. And stuff like that.
That indeed is true. Alyssa, you're an advocate and a public speaker on HIV and AIDS. How did this evolve?
Well, I got into the field about 3 years ago. I never really cared to get in the HIV field, and that was for personal reasons. I was born with the virus, and it was the stigma and the stereotypes that broke me down through my adolescent years that made me want to shun out HIV and everything that reminded me of it. When I came to college, after I finished my freshman year, I felt the need to somehow give back because I was exposed to great healthcare providers and great volunteers during my childhood that made me feel like a regular human being, which I am. And upon getting into the field, I was introduced to a teen camp for teenagers who are affected by the virus. And it was this camp that I was actual camper, not a counselor, but a camper. And I was just exposed to great people all over again. And that made me or reassure me that I am a regular person. I'm beautiful inside and out. And that if people do not accept me, it should not matter because I should be the one to accept myself, because with all the people in the world, there's bound to be someone to accept me, but that's not like the major, that's not the major standpoint of me accepting myself. It should be more so me accepting myself. That made no sense.
Well, I think it did, and I think it crosses the line of every young female and male mm-hmm. that's growing up in America today, learning to love themselves mm-hmm. for who they are and accept themselves as a beautiful indeed. Human being.
And I also and respect believe it's themselves. Easier, most definitely.
Because if you respect yourself, then you won't find yourself in mm-hmm. situations.
And it's definitely easier said than done.
It is.
But like the program that Naya was talking about, I had a program, I was involved in a program like that, and it was called Dating as a Positive and Negative Person. And it was three couples, one couple was negative and one couple was positive. And as a young woman, I was looking into dating. And that was a grave barrier because stigmas include, yeah, this person looks like they have the virus. And when people are comfortable, then they say whatever is on their mind mm-hmm. because they don't fear judgment. And so I had my friends growing up saying all these negative things about HIV. And so how did that make me feel? Of course, it made me feel insecure in my own respect mm-hmm. because these are people that I call my friends. Imagine the vast majority of people who do not associate with that. And then you think about guys that you're interested in because they have the same idea. And then there's laws that would imprison people who are positive. And it's just a lot that goes into it. Versus someone who has intentions to harm, rather someone who does not, and they're just more so fearful of being ostracized, even though they take the necessary precautions to protect themselves and their other partner. And in actuality, the other person who is not positive, who's negative, can morally pose a greater risk to the person who's positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of factors that goes into HIV versus the four bodily fluids and the typical rates of contraction as far as someone prostituting or someone shooting up heroin, which is the idea of someone who is HIV positive.
And I think we miss the boat when we categorize it, and I hate doing that because, okay, it's the prostitutes. Mm-hmm. Well, you got ladies on FAMU campus who are doing what?
Plenty, yeah.
Multiple sex partners.
Mm-hmm.
You're at risk. Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop looking down at the prostitute because mm-hmm. chances are they're using a condom.
And she's
and
just
you're
open
not.
With it.
Yes, mm-hmm. and she's just open with it. So it's these unintended consequences that are killing the African-American community
mm-hmm.
because we want to stigmatize and categorize this problem mm-hmm. when it's a black community problem.
And at the end of the day, even if you do categorize it, what improvement have you made? Because it's still
it's
here.
Still,
we right. still need a solution.
Indeed.
So we've made no progress.
Kennedy, you had some comments you wanted to make.
I mean, HIV is, like you said, it's kind of like if you have it, you're kind of looked down upon. I know that school nowadays, and even when I was younger, it's a popularity contest. Even I was one of the people who, going to a new school, came from private to public, I wanted to make friends, and I wanted to make them fast. I did not want to be by myself. I couldn't stand to be by myself. And as I got older, I looked back on the friends I used to have, and I was like, was I really with them? Like, they had nothing for me. They were not who I should have been with. They weren't nice to me when I look back. Like, some of them, they were, but most, I look back, I'm like, wow, all you did was say rude stuff to me, and we just go back and forth and laugh about it, but it's not funny. I mean, nowadays, if you're not, well, for most of the kids at my school, if you're not popular, you're not anything. I'm one of those people who I don't want to be popular. I want to know everybody.
Okay. Go ahead.
I want to know everybody, but be fine if I'm not talking to that person, like, every day, I talk to every little crowd, then I have my close friends who I keep by my side. I see them every day, talk to them every day, and they're the people I really trust.
And I think that just goes back to Alyssa, being comfortable with who you are.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking, you know, time flies. We have 2 minutes. Mr. Scarrett, what do you
say? I would say, unfortunately, our young people don't outgrow that too quickly, because at the college level, and Alyssa sees it, everybody wants to fit in.
Right.
Everybody wants to be part of some club or some association, and there are compromises that our young men and women make in order to do that. Unfortunately, some of those compromises are deadly when it comes to HIV and AIDS, and it's part of that overall conversation that we need to have, and not with the choir, but with a lot of the folks who are not hearing the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, our churches really need to be more involved and more upfront, you know, because most churches, they will allow the Women's Missionary Society to bring somebody in, but they will be very little done from the pulpit. Mm-hmm. And the pulpit is where the authority is. That's people listen to the pulpit. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to see more of that in this community.
Not only that, too, I want to say with the church thing, because I know at my church personally, I have put out actually fans around the church about HIV and AIDS before the service was over. Those fans disappeared. Our kids also need to know that oral sex is sex, too. And if a person is positive giving you oral sex, you're at risk of catching the HIV and AIDS. So just because you're having oral sex, that does not mean that you're still a virgin and that you're not having sex.
Well, I tell you, 411 Teen applauds you and applauds MACA, Ms. Hubbard, on a job well done. We really appreciate your efforts. And it seems like we never have enough time, so that means you'll have to come back again. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.